This is R.J. Rushdooney, Easy Chair number 160, December 9, 1987. Now, Otto Scott and I are going to discuss money and debt. Two very important subjects, and two we had better be concerned about these days, given the outlook for this country. In the Bible, money means hard money. When the Bible talks about just weights and just measures shall ye have, the just weights has reference to weights of silver and gold. In other words, this is seen in Scripture as true money. It was not a coin. It was a weight. So it was a piece of gold or silver that bore a precise weight. Then, with regard to debt, the Bible does not allow for long-term debt. As a general principle, owe no man anything save to love one another, as Paul tells us in Romans 13. In cases of need, debt may be contracted for 6 years and no more. Now, this premise, limited term on debts, was once the routine practice in this country. As a matter of fact, up until World War II, in most of the country, mortgages were for 5 years, short-term debt. A man was expected to pay for his house or his property in that time and pay 1/4 down. All this changed with World War II, and since then we have embarked on an insane course of inflation and debt, which will destroy us and the whole world with us. Well, with those introductory remarks, Otto, do you want to follow with any general statement?
Well, yes. I think, first of all, the crash of October the 19th proved for the first time that we really do not have a New York Stock Exchange and a London Exchange, a Tokyo Exchange, and so forth. We have one big stock exchange, of which London, Tokyo, New York, etc., are merely branches. And it moves up and down together, because we are tied together financially in a way that we've never been tied before. When there was a German inflation of 1921-22, those people inside Germany who had international connections and could get hard currency, and don't forget the dollar, the franc, the French franc, and the English pound were all pegged to the gold standard in 1922. So you could, if you could get hold of any of those currencies, you could buy all kinds of real values in Germany. You could buy houses, automobiles, factories, whatever. Mm-hmm. There was a transfer of wealth. And this is one of the reasons that antisemitism took such a leap, is that the members of the diaspora could get in touch with others in other countries and get hold of hard currency. Naturally, they took advantage of the situation. They bought what they could. And the German middle class was wiped out. And this left a tremendous bitterness. The Jews were blamed for what was a governmental crime, because it was the German government that did this, that created that situation. But today, we have no alternative currency to go to. The newspapers, the Wall Street Journal, let's say, keep telling us that we do. They kept saying, I saw an article 2 days ago in the Journal on gold, in which it said those who invested in gold in the last 2 years, let us say, would have made more money if they had bought Swiss francs or Japanese yen, all of which have increased in terms of against the dollar more than gold. But what they're not saying is that 2 years from now, all those currencies may be worthless.
Yes. R.E. McMaster recently pointed out that since October 19, the sale of gold coins has increased 600 to 900%. So we do have an element in the population that is waking up to the necessity for real money, and they are moving into gold coins.
Well, that's interesting. If we look back at gold, I think, let's take the 19th century in gold. There was no income tax anywhere.
No.
Gold could be used anywhere. You didn't have to have a Spanish gold dollar or an English gold dollar. You could just take your gold piece and spend it anywhere.
Yes.
If you found a gold mine, you could refine the gold and take it to the nearest treasury, and they would mint it out for you in the coin of that particular realm and give it back to you because it belonged to you. They didn't ask you where you got it.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't any of their business. So, and then you could spend it anywhere in the world you wanted. You could travel anywhere in the world in those days without a passport. The only country that issued a passport was Russia. And I remember when my dad got a passport from the Venezuelan government before World War I because he was an exile. They gave him a diplomatic passport and they stamped exilado on it, exiled. So he had a passport. It enabled him to travel around the world. But anyone could travel around the world then. You had to have some kind of a nationality. They didn't care. You had to, if you were going to stay in the country, of course, they'd take another look at you. But if you found a gold mine, what I'm saying is that you had a private treasury and you could do with it what you pleased. All right. Now we have an income tax. And I remember that one of the representatives said, how do we know how high this will go? He said it could go as high as 5%. And men rose up out of their seats in the House of Representatives and shouted him down as a damn fool. Nobody would dream of paying
yeah.
that kind of a tax. All right.
Or that anyone under a millionaire would ever be taxed.
Yes. Oh, well, tax the rich is the greatest hook
yeah.
there is. So we have, up until our time, you might say, people had money. Our fathers knew what money was. But we don't have any money. We've only got pieces of paper.
Yes, I can recall that into the 50s, the ranchers of Nevada, because I was there in the 40s to the beginning of the 50s, and the farmers of California, whom I knew in the 30s, the older men would refuse paper money. They had long coin pouches with a snap top, and they'd keep their money, silver dollars and silver coins, in those coin purses. It was the only real money as far as they were concerned. So after gold coins disappeared from circulation, they depended on silver and would not accept anything else.
Well, now, of course, the idea of silver as a monetary metal has been forgotten. A lot of people aren't aware that silver is silver.
Mm-hmm.
You don't hear anything more about the silver bugs. Silver right now is selling at something like 72 to 1 in relation to gold.
Yes.
That's an unheard of
yes.
ratio. But this is all interesting. We've moved into a world of paper. We have moved away from the basis of wealth. E.L. Kennedy, who is a senior partner at Lehman Brothers, gave me a long talk on it once. He is a director of Kerr McGee and a friend of Ashton Oil, and in charge of the oil desk at Lehman Brothers, at least he was. And his argument was that all the wealth of humanity comes from the earth. The food, the wood, the water, the animals and their skins and pelts and meat and so forth, and the minerals under the earth. Now, he knew this, but the average person today doesn't know it. The average American today, I could compare in terms of understanding of real wealth and technology and so forth to Ortega y Gasset's cannibal driving an automobile.
Mm-hmm.
And he said you could teach him how to drive, but you couldn't get him to understand the enormously complex system that creates the automobile.
Mm-hmm.
And we're living here something like the heirs of Byzantium who could no longer operate the defensive machinery to flood the dikes.
Yes.
Because they had forgotten what their forefathers had built. They'd forgotten how to manage it. Mm-hmm. In terms of money, in terms of wealth, we're reaching this situation.
Yes, and we must recognize that not only do we no longer have gold and silver for money, so there's nothing behind the paper money that is solid, but that we do have in back of the paper debt. Every Federal Reserve note is a sign of a borrowing by the federal government from the banks of your deposits and mine. So that it is only debt that is behind our currency.
Well, there is a man whose name I'm sorry I can't recall, who wrote a book on cycles of money and debt. And he made a very interesting point. He said, interest, which of course demands more money back than you received. And if everyone in the world received his share of the money in circulation and had to pay it back in interest, there wouldn't be enough money in the world to pay it back.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is an endless chain that once it begins.
Yes.
And of course it eventually comes back to the point of origin because there is a limit to the demands that can be made, just as there are limits to the amount of money that can be printed. The Mexican peso now is over $2,500 to one American dollar. $2,500. That 25-25 was the official figure that I last saw. We know the unofficial figure is higher. Now, 5 years ago, well, let's say 7 years ago, when I was living in San Diego, there were a lot of Americans going down to the banks in Tijuana and putting dollars into those banks. And they were getting something like 20 and 25% interest. And a friend of mine really got very annoyed with me because I wouldn't put any money in one of those banks. And I said, "You don't understand the Mexican government." He said, "Well, it's a good government." I said, "I'm not talking about their personal character or anything else." I said, "Collectively, they're a bunch of thieves, and they're going to steal it as soon as they have enough accumulated." And of course they did. And everyone, they seized all the money, all the American accounts.
Mm-hmm.
I never heard the American government say a word.
No, nor did your friend stop to think that if anybody is offering more interest than others, as the Penn Square Bank, I believe, in Oklahoma was doing, there's something wrong. They're hungry for your money. They're promising you something because they're desperate for dollars.
Of course. Of course, and a sovereign state isn't going to allow itself to be purchased by the people of another state.
Mm-hmm.
They just simply step in. Well, they not only did they step in then, but later on Lopez Portillo seized all the banks just before he got out of office. Now, his argument for seizing the banks was that Mexicans were shipping their money out of the country, and he was going to stop that. Of course, they found other means to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a limit to how much you can ship out of the country if you're in business. You can't ship your whole factory out.
Mm-hmm.
You can't ship your store. You can't ship your automobile. Maybe you could your automobile. But in other words, a lot of most people's wealth are intangible things. Then you have to sell it, get the money, and then, of course, the tax collector is right there because the tax collector is the fellow with the axe. He chops the roots of the system down.
Yes.
Because he is more interested in collecting taxes than he is on how you earn the money to owe the taxes.
Yes. Very little has been written on the tax collector. A very important book could be written just about the Turkish tax collector. Because the Turkish tax collector contributed to the destruction of every part of the Turkish Empire. They put a tax on windows, and windows disappeared. They put a tax on trees, and people cut down trees, and it led to deserts in many areas, as in North Africa. Everything they could tax, they taxed, and it led to the destruction of one area after another. Of course, they were not the first to do this, although they were among the most ruthless. The Romans did it earlier. And the Romans were resorting, as the Turks did, to torture. They tortured people to make them confess where they had hidden their wealth.
Well, our tortures are psychological.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of threat, there's a lot of bluff, there's a lot of fear, and there's a lot of heartless things go on.
Mm-hmm. The statement was made by John Marshall that the power to tax is the power to destroy.
And that power is pretty evident here. Even the courts are afraid of the tax.
Yes.
Because they're afraid they'll be audited. And those people who have been most vociferous in criticizing the tax collectors have been audited.
Mm-hmm.
And it's happened too often to be an accident.
But let's remember that the IRS is the creation and tool of Congress.
No question.
And Rostenkowski of Chicago, the congressman, has stated that he does not like to see the power of the IRS ever inhibited. He believes it's the best institution that Congress has ever created.
Well, Rostenkowski was arrested for drunken driving about 6 months ago. Maybe he said that when he was in his cups.
No, he said it when he was very, very sober to a member of the Chalcedon staff.
Did he really?
Yes.
Well, every agency of the government, not just the IRS, which is simply another agency, but the social service agency, the welfare agencies, the scientific agencies, the research agencies, and everything else, has only one purpose in life, and that is to expand its powers and authority.
And as they expand their power, they limit ours.
Oh, it's a natural corollary. The power has to come from someplace. Now, up until recently, most Americans really didn't care too much about the income tax because they didn't have to pay it at the end of the year. One of Reagan's good ideas, suggested to him undoubtedly by somebody else when he was governor of California, was to stop the withholding practice and to force all the people in California to pay the tax by writing out a check at the end of the year. Now, of course, if the whole country had to do that, there would be a tax revolt.
Yes.
Or else they'd have to lock everybody up, because most people just simply don't have enough money left at the end of the year to pay the tax.
No.
This is not a saving populace. But going back to the money and the debt, now, in a time of inflation, it's almost impossible for people to stay out of debt. They have to give the average man the benefit of the doubt. He doesn't want to go into debt. He wants naturally to have what his neighbors have. He wants to live decently. But everything is set up to lure him into debt. The automobile costs so much that he has to pay for it in time.
Yes.
Now I understand that they're going 6 years, mm-hmm. something like that, some incredible length of time to pay off a darn car. Same thing with the house, 30 years. And up until recently, he could write off the interest from his income tax. So therefore, he had two reasons. First, the object that he was going into debt for, and second, the fact that it reduced his taxes. Because on the face of it now, a man accumulates a debt and has to pay taxes on the debt,
mm-hmm.
which doesn't sound very equitable.
Well, when you have hard money, you encourage thrift. Because money is worth saving. It doesn't lose its value.
It's as good for your son as it was for you.
Exactly. But once you get onto paper, thrift progressively disappears because the money is constantly depreciating.
So if you don't spend it, you lose it anyway.
Exactly. I recall, a few years back, I think it was about 13-14 years ago, waiting for Dorothy to come home one evening from some place she and Grace had gone to in Los Angeles. And I was watching an old movie. I believe it was a Cary Grant movie from way back in the early 30s, one of his first. And he was a rich man in this.
Oh, in the 30s, they always played those, yeah.
Yes. And two girls were talking about him, and they described him as filthy rich because he made all of $5,000 a year.
Is that right?
Yes. Well, those were the days when in California, teachers who were making $150 a month were envied.
Well, yes, that was a good salary. Teachers were envied. Policemen and firemen were envied. Almost all the civil service was envied.
Mm-hmm.
They used to have ads, you remember. The ad said, retire on $125 a month.
I can remember them, $100 a month.
Right.
And it showed a picture
on a beach or whatever.
A Mediterranean cruise, looking over the side of the ship.
Everything was set.
The old man and his wife retired, looking at the moonlight.
But
$100 a month.
No, there has not been in all the history of recorded time a single government that has embarked upon an inflationary course that has failed to destroy its country.
Yes.
Without exception.
Mm-hmm.
2,400 years. Mexico, right now, with over 2,500 official pesos to a dollar, is on the edge of catastrophe. And yet, there isn't a thing in the press that I can see.
Yes. In terms of everything that's happened in history, every civil government in the world is doomed because they are digging their graves with their paper monies. They are destroying their economies. They have no future.
Well, there's a turn of government. What happens is that the government changes. When Elizabeth I came in, the first thing she did was to straighten out the currency that Henry VIII had left the realm in a mess. Then she was followed by James, who dissipated the currency again, who was followed by Charles I, who was even dumber than James, and they had a revolution. They had a change of government in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
The revolution really got its start. Hitler got his start in the inflation,
yes,
as well as in Versailles. It was Versailles plus inflation that opened the gates to Hitler. What we are opening the gates to, we don't know. But we are opening the gates.
Yeah.
Because I can't think of anyone who trusts the government right now. How could we trust the government that is stealing, that stole from my mother when she put money in war bonds in World War II? How can we trust these kind of people who tell us that inflation is good for us and that there's nothing to worry about?
Well, if anyone trusts the federal government, they should see a psychiatrist. They're pretty far gone.
Well, then we get into the business of the debt. Now, we were talking in England on the question of debt and its effect upon family life. Most divorces break up on the financial question.
Yes. More marital problems are due to money than to sex or any other thing.
Yes.
And the younger generation has been reared with no knowledge of hard money and a tremendous belief in debt, because they have seen their parents pay off good debts with bad money and prosper on it. So they're determined to start ahead of their parents.
Well, I was at a dinner party in the East 7 or 8 months ago, and the hostess's daughter and son-in-law were there, bemoaning the fact that they couldn't buy a home.
and they were both in their middle 20s. And this woman's daughter actually broke into tears and said it isn't fair.
Hmm.
Now, she just felt she had a perfect, she had a right to buy a house.
Yes. Well, one young couple that I tried to help or counsel came from fairly well-to-do families on both sides. They were helped and they given the down payment when they got married for a very lovely home, a membership in a country club, two new cars. But before long, they had gone into such debt that with both of them working, if they paid all their bills any month, they would have had only $50 left to eat on. So they were in desperation, they were quarreling, and they didn't see the problem, really. I counseled them to sell the house, pay off all their debts, rent, and try to make ends meet. And they did. But in no time at all, they felt so expansive that they started running up bills again because they had money suddenly.
Mm-hmm.
Someone told me recently that they had a couple come who were head over heels in debt. They brought all their financial records and this person went over them. I believe it was Victor Poirier. And found out the situation was appalling. And told them, this is going to take some drastic steps. And he told them exactly how badly they were in debt because they didn't know. Their credit card debts ran into thousands of dollars alone. And said they were going to have to bite the bullet. Well, their reaction was to break the appointment because what he had said was so upsetting and to go out to dinner to the most expensive place in the city. They said they had to do it to feel better. Now, that's the kind of mentality we face on all sides now. They live in an unrealistic world, and they're following the federal government and all their neighbors in doing so.
Well, the government is like the young couple. This government does not believe that it will collapse. It does not believe that anything will ever happen to it. It believes, like Lyndon Johnson, that there is no limit to the American economy and no end to the tolerance of the American people. But all good things come to an end. We have a dollar that was equivalent to 8 cents in 1913. This inflation has been going on since 1913. That's a long time.
Yes.
That's two generations. The Byzantine Empire came down in three. After 900 years.
Yes.
900 years. We've got 200 years. And I remember a European friend of mine in New Orleans who asked, I said, this is the oldest place in New Orleans. He said, how old is it? And I told him, and he said, our family home is older in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
We're young in this incarnation. But don't forget the previous American government, the Articles of Confederation, collapsed because of bad money.
Yes.
Now, the debt situation is much worse because most people, I don't know if I could say most people, but a great many people are not aware of the fact that they could lose what they have.
Yes.
And the banks, of all the people in the world, I hope there are no bankers listening, because I do not trust bankers. bankers come after you when you're in trouble. They only lend you money when you don't want it. And the minute you get into trouble, they want to call the loan and call the mortgage. And then they don't know what to do with it. They can't resell the house, but they'll take it away from you. And I don't know what's going to happen to the American people when they get into a Mexican situation.
And we're not too many years away from it.
Well, that was 5 years for that, for the final fall.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to deal a little more with the subject of debt, because the Bible has a great deal to say about it. One of the things that we find when we study the world of the Bible is that there are two empires in biblical antiquity that were specialists in debt: the old Babylonian Empire and Assyria. Now, both of these were aggressive military empires, but they had a policy of, first of all, destroying the morale of a country through debt. They had a class known as Tankaru, who were merchants or brokers or merchant bankers, money lenders, and always state agents. They would send them into a country that they intended in time to invade. They would send them with all kinds of desirable goods and easy credit terms. The people would be encouraged to go into debt. There's a reference to these people in Nahum 3:16 in the Old Testament. But these people would go in no time at all, sell everyone on easy credit, all kinds of desirable goods. And the whole country, from one end to another, would become debtors to these merchant traders. In no time at all, debt would sap their independence. The Bible tells us in Proverbs that the borrower is a servant or a slave to the lender. Old Babylon and then Assyria knew this very well. And so their armies would only march after a people had been destroyed internally, as far as their morale and their morality was concerned, okay, by debt.
All right. Now, the Soviets are doing it a different way, but the essence is very similar. What the Soviets have done has been to borrow enormous sums of money.
Yes.
They have borrowed, nobody knows exactly how many billions of dollars had flowed from the United States to the Soviet Empire, because you can't get the records. Mm-hmm. Neither the banks, nor the Treasury Department, nor the IMF, nor the various UN agencies, the International World Bank, all of these things that we've set up will reveal any of these details to any of us. But we do know that it begins at 80 billion and it goes up.
Yes.
Right now, Gorbachev is asking for more, and he's going to get more. And we, our financial institutions, have given so much money to the Soviet Empire that they are dependent upon the Soviet Empire. So the effect is the same.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, you have the other thing, which you went over rather quickly. I suppose we would begin here with a spiritual value, that if you lose your spiritual independence, then everything else begins to sink. Your story about the couple that went out to the expensive restaurant is very typical.
Mm-hmm.
Because eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow the bill collector is going to come.
Yes, yes.
And the whole country now is tied in inextricably with not only the Soviet bloc, but with other Western countries. The Japanese have bought our government bonds. The Japanese have invested heavily in our real estate.
The English banks have always called a tune for the American bankers because the English bankers are smarter than the American bankers. I hate to say it, but it's true. They've outsmarted the American bankers time and time again, and they do it with such subtle charm that the Americans keep falling for it. But we are tied in. All of us are tied together. Now, how can an economy break loose when it is caught up in this world of paper? Electronic transfers now faster equal to the speed of light. Multi-millions cross international boundaries, and the various governments here have lost control of the financial black market. So we're not going to just go down alone. We're going to go down with the whole ship.
Yes. Well, the solution to this is not going to be political. It's going to be moral. As people across the country say to themselves, under God, I have no right to be in debt. I have no right to mortgage my future. I belong to God, not to the banker. Then, as people begin to live this way, debt-free, it's going to have its repercussions.
Of course.
If the Christian community, to any appreciable extent, let's say a small fraction of the Christians, got out of debt, it would have an effect on the entire country.
Of course it would, because then you'd have a free group.
Yes.
Who would then lead the others.
Yes.
You know, the police have this. You can't cheat an honest man.
Mm-hmm.
You can't pull an honest man into a swindle, which is the way most people get cheated.
Well, today, one of the things that's holding back the Christian community as far as its action is concerned, missionary work overseas, missionary work here, Christian homes for all kinds of needs, Christian welfare, everything, is the fact that the average church member is head over heels in debt. As a matter of fact, those who profess to be Bible-believing have been shown, according to surveys, to be deeper in debt than their non-Christian neighbors.
Maybe they have more faith in God. They think God's going to pay off the debt for them.
And that's exactly the point. They believe that because they are Christians, the Lord is going to bless them, even when they are breaking his law by going head over heels in debt, by living in terms of satisfying their every need. But the Lord is somehow going to protect them and deliver them.
Well, God is not a buttercup.
No.
Cannot be relied upon to provide summer weather throughout life. There are storms, there are winters, there are tests. Sometimes it's a very good salutary test to lose money. My father, as you know, was a promoter and sometimes lost everything. You can never tell by looking at him. He always looked the same. But when they came, I'll never forget when they came and took the Stromberg Carlson radio away because he hadn't paid for it. And when we couldn't answer the phone because of the bill collectors calling up, and he would just come home later, that's all. He would come home at 11 o'clock, and he would leave at 6. But the rest of us were very well aware of the fact that this was a bad period, and it gave me a horror of debt, absolute horror. I hate it. And I look at these ads for 6 years to buy an automobile and think I'd rather build one myself.
Well, the sad fact is the present generation has no such feeling about debt. And we have seen a major change in attitude. Credit once meant that you were believable. You could be credited.
That's right.
That means your ability to borrow money. And if you're out of debt, you're in trouble, as Dorothy and I found a few years ago. nobody wants to lend you any money.
Because you don't owe any?
That is, sell you anything if you have to buy something on time. Or when we bought the house, we were making a large down payment, far more than is normal, but that wasn't enough. We had no credit record. And I said, isn't it a sign of credit that we're paying more down than was asked for? But they're so totally enmeshed in their peculiar mode of thinking.
Well, I recall listening to corporate managers wondering whether or not to hire a fellow. They would prefer a fellow with two children who had a mortgage.
Yes.
And in fact, if he didn't have a house, they would lend him the down payment so that he would be tied to them. And then they knew that they had somebody that wasn't going to leave very quickly.
Like the Babylonians and Assyrians.
Very similar. Very similar.
Same premise.
But let's look at the thing from an overall, from a higher look. If we have all this sea of paper washing back and forth between Switzerland and whatnot. Now, I read this article, I started to tell you, what said we would have made more money, you and I, if we had bought Swiss francs and so forth. But at the end of it, in the last paragraph, it said the central banks in recent weeks have bought so many tons of gold.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well now, why are the central banks dealing in gold while they're telling the rest of us that paper is good enough for us?
Yes.
If gold is no good, why do the central banks use it? Why is it the basis for all international exchanges between governments?
Yes. Well, we are seeing a situation where increasingly the whole world looks like a modern Tower of Babel.
Yes. However, we have this peculiarity. We have here the very large population, 240 million or so, the most highly skilled people, I guess, in the world. We have people in this country who really can do literally anything. This is one of the arguments of the pro-SDI people, is that if they were turned loose, as the atomic bomb thing was turned loose, as the trip to the moon was turned loose, they could create a strategic defense that would protect the United States. And I'm sure that we have the technologists who could do it, if they were allowed to do it. We simply do not have a population that will add things up.
No, because we have the same idea that the builders of the Tower of Babel had. When you examine that account and the symbolism that was involved in it, the whole idea was that they were going to supplant God's order with a totally man-made order and create a one world based on man's idea of law and order, a new Garden of Eden. Well, this is what these people are dreaming about. They are going to create a one-world paradise without God, without hard money, without any of the basic truths that we as Christians have always felt are essential to any social order. They are busy creating a society that is going to be, in every aspect, man-made.
Well, big chunks are falling apart. Of course, I agree with what you say, and I think you've said it very well. I think it's true. They've lost sight of reality, and they've lost sight of God. Let's look at the situation vis-a-vis Mexico and ourselves. We know that Mexico has an enormous debt, and that this debt is owed in large measure to American institutions. We are watching the Mexican government, the money in Mexico, fall apart.
Yes.
So, I don't know how many novels have been recently sold on the kind of debacle this will open up.
Mexico has to default.
Mm-hmm.
And any country, any one of the third world countries that defaults will set up a chain reaction where, oh, they will all default.
Mm-hmm.
And we're sitting here talking about how wonderful it is that we're taking the protective missiles away from the Europeans.
Mm-hmm.
This is the most important subject on earth at this point, to strip Europe of its defenses.
Yes. Well, in one country after another, increasingly, people cannot go outside of their borders with their money. Their
currency. They're not allowed.
Well,
it's not exchangeable.
Yes. The Orthopedic Surgeons Conventions have a fund so that surgeons in countries like, say, Argentina can attend using this fund, because the Argentinian currency will not buy anything outside of Argentina. Now, the interesting fact that nobody ever calls attention to is that the Soviet funds are worthless outside of the Soviet Union.
Well, they have no money.
And they could not trade, they could not do a thing outside of their borders without credit or without loans.
Yeah, credit and loans they have. They have gold. They have gold, and every so often they have to disgorge some of that gold in order to get American credits, in order to get English credits, and so forth. But if we were to economically boycott the Soviet Union, of course it would collapse.
Yes. And certainly they've never had gold to the tune of $80 billion. So the gold they discharge has little relationship to the credit they receive and the loans.
All right. We have gold. We have silver. Eric Danish, a veteran of the German inflation, told me that they even went into buildings and took out the lead pipes.
Hmm.
They took the bronze door knockers off the doors. All metal became valuable. Old people committed suicide because the inflation wiped out their pensions.
Dorothy and I know a man who was there as a boy. His father was an American official. And well-to-do Germans were begging them for a dime, just a silver dime, and ready to trade their gold watches, anything, for some kind of hard currency.
Well, the imagination boggles at the idea of a global financial crisis, and yet we came very close to it.
Yes, and Ron Paul has called attention to the fact that we are moving into it, and he believes that this is not going to be like the Depression, which was a deflationary depression. The one we are moving into now will be an inflationary depression, with higher inflation, higher interest rates, higher unemployment, more bankruptcies, junk bond defaults, brokerage house and bank failures, possible mutual fund failures, declining standard of living, and so on and on.
Look at all these old people that we have.
Yes.
Look at all the people we have on pensions, all these men playing golf every day. I don't know how they do it. I don't know how they can do it. But we've got all kinds of elderly people. I notice when I go to these various places where I give a lecture on these seminars and whatnot, how many of the people who are staying in the hotels are elderly, because the younger people are all working. Now, young people are having a hard time today. Both the husband and the wife works, and the kid is in some sort of a play care, daycare center. They're running back and forth all the time. They have very little free time. And all this barely keep up. Barely keep up. This has a lot to do with the abortion rate.
Mm-hmm.
Because they can't afford any more children, they feel.
Yes.
They have no faith, you see. They have no reason to to say, well, this child comes from God, and God will provide.
Ron Paul, in his special alert of his investment letter, says, among other things, to accumulate wholly owned, physically held gold and silver, and to get out of debt.
Well, easier said than done for many. I know people in the big cities who can't move. They haven't saved enough money to get out.
Yes.
Had to live long enough once they move out to find a new place to work.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know where to go. We have millions that are trapped.
Yes.
And the government is not talking about it. The social scientists don't talk about it. I read Dear Abby whenever I pick up a paper. I like those flip comments and so forth. Of course, she's a total feminist. But I notice that there's very little about money.
Yes.
And yet I know that the letters that she gets must be heavy with those problems.
Yes. But that doesn't make good reading.
No. It's disheartening reading.
Yes.
The New York Times, every Christmas season, puts out the 100 neediest cases. And they have capsule descriptions of people in the most heart-rending situations. That's the 100 neediest.
Mm-hmm.
We can think of how many thousands that's culled from.
Yes. And it's only going to get worse. Because the economy is in for serious problems.
Well, one young man some time back asked me, what, he said, advice do you have if this debacle comes about? What would you advise me to do in preparation for it? And I said, don't get caught alone.
Mm-hmm.
Be a member of a group. Be a member of a church.
Yes.
Be a member of good people. An organization of good people so that you can mutually help yourself in times of storm.
Yes. Dr. Michael Schluter, whom we visited at Cambridge, England, has written about family associations and their necessity in all times and especially a time of crisis. And we did publish his article on that last year, June of 86. I think he's thoroughly right. The interesting thing is that in the last depression, families did pull together. They moved in with one another.
Oh, yes.
They helped each other to a tremendous extent, or else the depression would have been far, far worse than any description of it.
Well, actually, contrary to the assumptions of cynics, hard times and crises bring out the best elements and the best features of human beings. Everyone I knew that had a job during the Depression had somebody sleeping on the living room sofa who needed a place. Wartime, there has less mental breakdowns. People pull together in times of crisis. If there is a debacle, we will see a side of America that you and I remember that a lot of young people haven't seen.
Yes, but the first stages will be very difficult because we've had too many people grow up who've never had problems, who feel that God should not permit them to have problems.
Well, that's an old argument. God should not permit sickness, disease, trouble, and bad weather. Yes, that's an old argument. Yes.
And somebody raised that argument with Top Lady, who wrote Rock of Ages, Cleft for Me, citing a specific thing and saying, if you were God, could you do this? And Top Lady answered, when I am God, I will tell you.
Well, don't forget, the people who are complaining about the situation are the people who put this government into office.
Yes, yes.
They have a responsibility. You know, they could march to the polls and vote, and they could change the government. And they're so lost to reality, they don't even vote.
No. And they vote only for more of the same. Christians are no better than non-Christians, and they're voting. It has been shown from surveys that Christians do not vote any differently from non-Christians.
Well, that's too bad. They really should.
Well, that's because most of your Christian community is made up of evangelicals who are mostly pietistic and don't see the relevance of our faith to the world around us.
They look at the faith as magic.
Yes.
So many incantations a day.
Yes.
Doesn't work.
It's just fire and life insurance for them. It's not the way of life. God's plan for dominion on earth.
Well, don't forget that this government originally came out of a debacle. And that may be one of the reasons why the founders spent so much time on mechanics, so
yes.
to speak, and so little time on the spiritual value. But a debacle would certainly give opportunity for a reformation, for a renewal, for a new method, for real money.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the present crisis is going to bring a great many things to the fore. I've been going through, as you know, the book of Leviticus and dealing of late with the Jubilee. And the Jubilee is of central importance to the crisis we face. A very interesting book was written last year and published in August 1987. The author is David Knox Barker, Jubilee on Wall Street, An Optimistic Look at the Coming Financial Crash, published by Prescott Press in Lafayette, Louisiana. It's an excellent book because as a financial consultant and president of a corporation, this man brings a biblical perspective onto the crisis and why we have to expect it, why it is necessary in terms of God's law, and how great a help it will be to our future. It is, by the way, a good history of money and banking in the process. And a great many interesting things in it. I thought this was amusing about bank examiners in the early days. One account tells of a bank examiner, he writes, as he traveled through the Midwest. The banks knew his travel plans and had the same gold coin follow him around to be whisked in the back door of the banks he visited and quickly deposited in the bank. There was a vast amount of fraud and circulation of bad notes.
That's true, but you know the old theory was, the old argument was that a depression burned out the inefficient and the incompetent and the redundant.
Yes.
Now, our government has been bailing out the inefficient and the incompetent and the redundant for an awful long time at the expense of the productive and the competent and the diligent.
Yes, and something nobody has written about, this little incident and a few other things that Barker calls attention to, do give you a little hint of the problem. But the weakness of the Constitution was that when it required gold and silver, it did not place any requirement on the banks, any hard money requirement. The banks have always been the inflationary element in the United States. They have created every major depression, and they have loaned recklessly and have created the crises we have had.
Well, I just received in the mail this week a check made out for $1,000. Instead of extending my credit line for another $1,000, they sent me a check for $1,000 and said, please spend this. Of course, it'll be added to your account. You know, it was in the picture window, and I saw somebody sending me a check. Well, fine. I opened it up, and it's $1,000. I said, oh, how nice. And then I saw they came from the bank.
A mean trick.
Yes.
To tease you with $1,000.
Just suppose I was in trouble. Yes. And I needed the money. That would be irresistible. Especially just before Christmas.
Yes. Well, I wonder what they have against me, Otto. I haven't gotten one.
Well, maybe they know better. I don't know. But that it kind of took me aback. Of course, the paper transfer is just as effective.
Yes. Well, our time is just about over. Any last comment, Otto?
Well, I think people should not allow themselves to get too frightened by the comments that we've been making.
Yes.
You know that the human race is strong, that people can put up and endure and come out better for it, and there's been too much fear spread. Too many people have been frightened by too many others. I think the United States has been subjected to tremendous psychological pressure to frighten everybody, to shake their self-confidence, their self-respect, their belief in themselves, in their neighbors, and in God.
Yes.
This is part of the campaign to bring us down. So I hope that whatever we say about money and debt doesn't frighten people.
Yes, and I'll add this final word, that the best thing about this crisis is that God is shattering the power of the federal government, the world's various civil governments, and of the banks. So while it is going to be difficult, it points to our deliverance. It points to the end of an evil system and an opportunity for us to reorganize society in terms of God's Word.
Very good.
Well, thank you all for listening, and God bless you.